Talk about CBD. It's pretty much everywhere these days. That's right. Of course, the clinical science has not caught up to the anecdotes, but people are showing significant benefits. Very encouraging. But first, let's define exactly what we're talking about here. CBD is cannabidiol, an extract from hemp. And while you might associate with marijuana, CBD is the non-high-inducing, non-rewarding component of hemp, and therefore it doesn't have the same risk that cannabis would. It doesn't cause the high. Now, about the products, there are a ton on the market. Forgetting the vast array of reported benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and high-quality manufacturing standards. No hype. Their CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which are clearly described so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that sound too good to be true. Like I said, the reported benefits of CBD are very compelling. I'm excited to see how things develop in the science, but if you're ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That is my site, drdrew.com/SELECT. And for a limited time, you get 25% off at checkout with code Dr. Drew, DRDREW. And welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast, everybody. Be sure to keep wind in the sail of that Corolla pirate ship and click through on the banners and support the products that support us here. It's a privilege to keep doing these things, and we appreciate you guys downloading. And don't forget, drdrew.com, check out that opiate series. It's both a book, I mean, you can read it, or it's an article series, and now audiobooks with some really interesting interviews alongside of the copy. So check that out. Check out After Dark as well. I think you'll like that one if you get Dr. After Dark. Today, we're welcoming Anthony Jay. He has a new book called Estrogeneration, How Estrogenics Are Making You Fat, Sick, and Infertile. Podcast is Chagrin and Tonic. Website is ajcco.com. You can follow Anthony at Anthony G. Jay. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So give me the thumbnail on the book.
Well, I mean, basically, we're exposed to these chemicals, these artificial estrogen chemicals. They're all over the place in our environment. Mm-hmm. And I think people are underestimating the impact. Well, first, they don't even realize that we're being exposed. A lot of people don't realize, oh, BPA is bad because it's estrogenic. It's acting like
estrogen. Given that most people now are obese and mm-hmm. adipose tissue produce large amounts of estrogen, how could you even distinguish it from what's happening clinically to people?
Well, I mean, you can definitely do the receptor binding assays and look.
Okay. We've done that in individuals. Well, in other words, everyone's estrogenized. I totally with you on that.
Right.
But there are so many different reasons that we are.
Right.
Alcohol, obesity,
right.
Cannabis. These things are all highly estrogenic, and people are just roaring down the road, and the BPHs or whatever else is out there.
Yeah.
BPA,
BPAs, BPS, yeah. BPAF. There's all kinds of analogs to BPA. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, yes, we're estrogenized, but that's natural estrogen, right? Like these fat cells that you're talking about,
these
lipid-filled fat cells, they're causing our bodies to, increase estrogen.
Dramatically.
But that's totally different than artificial estrogen, which our body doesn't really know how to deal with because, our ancestors were never exposed. So evolutionarily, our bodies are like, what the hell is this,
And again, clinically, how do we distinguish it from all the other estrogenic effects?
You can sometimes and you can't sometimes.
Right.
So, one of the things you see is decreased testosterone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
When, the more BPA is in your urine, the less testosterone you have, for example.
Okay, so there's at least a direct relationship with that one thing. And tell us where the BPAs are coming from.
Well, the plastics, right? So this is why you see BPA-free on plastic water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what I did with my book is I tried to distinguish not just BPA, but what are the other ones?
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, like Agent Orange can screw up your hormones, right? But which chemicals are we being exposed to every day? So it's not just like, once every 6 months, once a decade.
Right.
Which wouldn't really be that big of a problem because these effects are kind of subtle
mm-hmm.
because they are acting on a natural system in our body. So we're not getting bloated. We're not getting headaches from artificial estrogens, but we're seeing long-term sustained impacts. And so sometimes those are exactly the same as natural estrogen. Sometimes they're a little different. But usually, the health effects, the health impacts are pretty similar to pregnancy and kind of a disruption or a bastardization of that process, right? So when you become pregnant, for example, you gain some weight,
mm-hmm.
fat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a natural process because our ancestors didn't always have access to food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing to have some fat. It's the most efficient storage form for energy. But you flip that fat switch on with BPA, right? And you may not even be pregnant. You might be a man. You might be a kid, you know, and you obviously don't want to be storing excess body fat because then, like you said, it's kind of a vicious cycle of your body secreting more inflammatory hormones, inflammatory chemicals, you know. I mean, you look fat. That's a problem.
Yeah, I'm a little confused with the pregnancy analogy and that most of pregnancy is mediated through progesterone and not estrogen.
Well, your estrogen goes way up. So women,
not nearly as much as progesterone, which is...
Yeah, so, but these chemicals aren't acting like progesterone. They're acting like estrogen.
Okay.
And so, yeah, estrogen is more subtle, but, you know, it has a pretty substantial impact. So women are generally between about 20 to 400 nanograms per liter of estrogen, mm-hmm. natural estrogen. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when they become pregnant, they go over 1,000. And, you know, people also should be aware that men naturally are about... 20 nanograms per liter of estrogen. You know, it's not that different. You'd think women would be in the thousands and men would be 20, you know, but in reality, women are also about 20, up to about 400. Mm. But then again, when they become pregnant suddenly, you know, that's double, triple, quadruple in terms of the estrogen. And then, you know, again, like you said, it's not totally an estrogen response, but these chemicals, I think for the most part, aren't total estrogen response.
And where do they come from? Exactly.
Well, there's a lot of sources. And that's
like, what
one
we
of the,
do to avoid them is really the converse of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you have to understand where they come from for sure. And that's kind of the work that I put in terms of my book is understanding, well, you know, it's like you said, cannabis, right? Like cannabis smoke is estrogenic. If you eat the edibles, it's not estrogenic. So you have to be, you know, that's one.
There's one thing you do. Simple things like that can make a big difference.
Yeah, especially for teenagers. You know, you want to protect your fertility. You're going to be more sensitive when you're a teenager or a younger person even. That's one source, pretty, you know, inconsistent. Not everybody's smoking cannabis every day. But one of the more common sources is parabens, phthalates, BPA, obviously we mentioned.
And they're coming. And where are we encountering those?
Yeah, for sure. So plastics.
Every single plastic, a plastic bag, a plastic container, a plastic water bottle.
Pretty much, yeah.
Everything, anything that's
pretty
plastic.
Close. Plastic 2, 4, and 5. So if you look on the recycling symbols on the bottom of the container, usually that's probably plastic number 1.
How do you?
Do you see it on there?
No.
So we've got Dr. Drew holding his
looking
water,
at a water
bottle. Now sometimes they don't have a symbol, meaning they're mixed and they're not recyclable.
Okay.
And that might be one of the rare.
Is it mixed good or bad?
Yeah, it's probably worse, but. Yeah, you're right. You know, it's not on there.
Nothing down there.
Usually that would be a plastic number 1, the water bottles, which is polyethylene terephthalate. Now, a lot of scientists will debate that and say, oh, there's no leaching of phthalates with the plastic number 1, just like they said with plastic number 7, which is BPA. So if you look on your bottle, I was doing a podcast with Vinny Tortorich, and he looked on the bottom of his bottle, and it was plastic number 7, mm-hmm. a.k.a. BPA. Mm-hmm. So he had bought his bottle a while back before the whole BPA-free craze hit. And, you know, BPA is pretty well established now as being problematic in a lot of different ways. Again, it's subtle. It's not immediate. You're not going to just blow it up and become 300 pounds overnight. But, you know, you start seeing fertility issues. You start seeing testosterone decrease. You start seeing, you know...
It's
some
interesting. You would think
depression.
That would reduce the prostate cancer potential, and yet it's going the other way.
Well, that's because prostate cancer is dependent on estrogen receptor beta. So there's alpha and beta. There's two estrogen receptors, right?
Well, the androgen receptor is the big mediator of prostate cancer. Oh, please. I do research in that area.
Well,
that's most of the research is directed
at. So there's one androgen receptor, right? So whereas with estrogen, there's two receptors. There's estrogen receptor alpha and estrogen receptor beta. A lot of the health problems come from the estrogen receptor alpha activation in terms of prostate cancer, at least in cells. In fact, beta is probably protective. So things like licorice root, right, they preferentially activate your estrogen receptor beta.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be protective against prostate cancer. So most of the time when people are out looking for drugs that are protective for prostate cancer.
Well, mostly lowering testosterone will be protective. And
okay,
so,
I trust you. I'm not.
But I don't understand why that is not reducing the incidence at all. In fact, it's going the other way.
Well, I mean.
So maybe other factors. Who knows?
Well, so my question would be, why wouldn't teenagers have a lot of prostate cancer? I don't know much about this topic.
Why would they?
Why wouldn't teenagers be getting prostate cancer? Their testosterone is through the roof.
Right. It's not enough time, not enough time of exposure. And whatever genetic mechanisms are turning on and off through time.
Okay, so you're saying bodybuilders and people that are doing TRT have
no, there actually is it's not associated. Increasing testosterone doesn't cause prostate cancer. It can reactivate metastases, we think.
In some
cases, can't cause prostate cancer. Low testosterone does reduce prostate cancer activity. So lowering it at least would delay the onset or would delay the maybe the you know progressiveness. People would be presenting later, that sort of thing.
So. Yeah, and I wonder if that's a large part to aromatization
of
testosterone. In other words, if your levels are high, you're getting aromatization, which is creating estradiol, which is activating estrogen receptor alpha. Again, I'm not a super expert on this topic.
Lowering levels reduces.
So then lowering levels would reduce that aromatization, thereby reducing estrogen.
It all seems to be mediated through the androgen receptor. That's where all the research is directed.
Interesting.
Because that receptor is what sends the messages inside the cell that determine prostate cancer activity.
Okay.
So,
like I said, I believe you. I just know there's a researcher at Harvard who would probably debate you on that. And I don't.
In terms of causation.
Correct.
Right. And I'm wondering, I'm not talking so much about causation as much as presentation. In other words, it should be slowed.
Right.
The growth is slowed, the grade is slowed, that sort of thing.
Interesting.
And so I'm wondering why that doesn't happen. I mean, a lot of guys who knows? We're not going to be able to answer it in a few minutes here. But
well, sir, I'm certainly not the expert.
But I'm still one. People are going to know how do I avoid these things. So,
that's for sure.
Important thing.
Well, I mean, let's jump right in. Plastics, avoid plastics, right? I mean, like I said, scientists used to tell you avoid BPA doesn't leach.
Yeah,
you know, because it's all linked together, right?
Yeah.
It's like these bisphenols are all connected.
Right,
so there's no leaching. That's what we were told.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we're realizing, oh, that's not really true. Like, for example, if you put coffee in a BPA mug. If there's caffeinated coffee, you get 25% more leaching than decaf even. Hmm. So the different substances within the actual plastic, you know, can make a dramatic impact in terms of the leaching. For example,
oils. Is that strictly
oils.
For BPA or is that?
No, well, at least that study that I'm citing was just looking at BPA, but so, yeah, all these chemicals have.
So we shouldn't be putting coffee in a plastic cup? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So that's something we cannot do. So,
yeah.
And is heating generally something should be to be avoided?
With plastics, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So heating is like putting your plastic
soup.
Heating your stuff in the microwave with plastic. That's asking for trouble.
Yeah, long-term slow trouble, right? I mean,
yeah.
If that was the only thing you were doing that was exposing you to xenoestrogen, I'd say, yeah, it's probably not that big of a deal. But the problem is another big source, personal care products.
Hmm.
So even the FDA is acknowledging this. They've got a list of phthalates, you know, personal care products with phthalates, and that's spelled PHTH. I know you know this.
Some of them have estrogens in them flat out, right?
Straight up estrogen?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
A lot of the women's products, yeah. Yeah, a lot of women's products.
Well, I mean, that's interesting.
I would believe it. I think
they
sort of plump up skin and stuff.
Sure,
I think
sure.
They do that kind of stuff.
Well, and there's a lot of natural benefits to natural estrogen.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem, again, when you disrupt that natural system, that's where I start to see a lot of the issues that most people are either trying to sweep under the rug or they're just not aware. I think the general public's not as much aware.
And the issues being?
Well, like I say, long-term issues. So fat gains, depression. You see, like, for example, children with more BPA in their urine have a lot more depression.
Hmm.
I mean, a lot of associations in terms of humans,
sure.
But in terms of animals, you start seeing a lot of the, you know, like, for example, atrazine. Atrazine is a herbicide. It's estrogenic. It's the second most used herbicide in North America. In Europe, atrazine totally illegal, right? But it makes my top 10 list because, you know, it's estrogenic.
Hmm.
And they did a study with rats. They had two fairly large groups of rats and they gave them quote unquote low dose atrazine. I emphasize that because everybody always says, well, you give them a ton of stuff and
right.
Of course they're going to. So they gave them low dose atrazine and they.
Is low dose at a level we would be exposed to in their environment?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Okay. For sure. 3,000 nanograms per liter is allowed in our drinking water in America. And they were giving them like 200 nanograms per liter changes a male frog to a female frog.
Mm.
You know, of course they're sitting and soaking in it, but
sure.
That's a little caveat, but it's still pretty dramatic, you know, these 200 nanogram levels. And they gave them low dose in the drinking water. Everything else the same. Calorie counting, the whole thing. Everything was the same. Same diet, same exercise, the whole thing. And the atrazine exposed rat group, they all got fat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, you know, obviously not something Americans want to hear, you know, or want to be exposed to. Oh, I've got the atrazine issue as well, which is a drinking water issue.
So that one we pretty much can't avoid.
Well, you can. You just filter your drinking water. So you have to use activated charcoal.
The activated charcoal filters will do that.
Yep.
Okay.
I've used it in research labs. It removes all the birth control, all the artificial estrogen chemicals, the whole thing.
The charcoal does. And now you're saying that there's some birth control because our water supply is contaminated.
Oh, for sure. Mm. And at least in the big cities, right? Like where we are here today. Out in the rural countries, it's not, but there you got the atrazine.
Is the bottle water contained other than the plastic?
No, they don't have the birth control in there.
Yeah.
Not that I know of.
And so, again, I'm trying to get a systematic approach to avoiding the plastic. So you can use plastic bags? Not liquids in there?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
plastic bags are okay.
Like dry foods, you know, you put some bread in there or something. No big deal, right? You're not going to get leaching on a dry
food. Leaching is strictly liquid
based.
And heat.
Yeah, exactly.
And heat.
And duration, right? Like if you have no heat, but your water bottle is sitting for a longer period of time, you get more leaching. So those are the three principles of transfer.
Mm-hmm. Are there other than the sort of estrogenic issues around body habitus and mood and fertility, are there other things you're worried about with the estrogen?
Well, the biggest thing, and I mean, I feel like we're jumping pretty fast here, is epigenetic modifications. Mm-hmm. On top of our DNA, we have marks called epigenetic marks. And histones also have this. I know you know this, but I just for the audience,
please.
I don't want to get too technical. But the way I explain it for people is basically musical notes, right? You've got music, real simple song. Mary had a little lamb. Give that to you. You can play that song, right? Give the sheet music to somebody else. They can play that song. That's the DNA. Super simple. One line. You put chords on top of that. That's epigenetics, those extra marks on top of that. So the song is still Mary Had a Little Lamb, same song. It's more complex. Mm-hmm. You can change those chords, right? You can change the other notes, and it obviously changes the song. You pass that to somebody else. The DNA is staying the same, but the notes on top of the notes, a.k.a. the epigenetics, mm-hmm. that changes. And that's the real problem. I mean, that's why my book is called Estrogeneration, because by definition, epigenetic changes can be inherited. So we're actually modifying our health and we're passing on those health problems.
This through the histone mechanisms?
No, these are methylation and histones.
Methylation of the DNA.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, both.
When I think of epigenetics, I always think about RNA mechanisms in the periphery. You're talking about altering
direct
on the gene, on the
Oh, yeah, you have to
itself.
To pass them on, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, Michael Skinner is the real heroic scientist in this area. He grows – I talked to him at the Mayo Clinic and – had lunch with him and the whole thing, and he grows about 3,000 to 5,000 mice at any given time. Mm. And he's checked all these different, he's tested atrazine, he's tested all these things, and they change all sorts of epigenetic method. He just does differential methylated regions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's really nervous about our future. He's more so pessimistic than I am. Mm. I mean, for me, you know, yeah, I see the same things he's seeing, but I see the ways to avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think people can. It's not that difficult to avoid.
Is he worried about exclusively the same chemicals that you're worried about? Is he have other
things? Yeah, he's adding a couple other ones like jet fuel and some other things. But honestly, I don't see the daily exposures. I do see the daily, you know, it's an argument about exposure types and classes.
I've always wondered when I'd heard this in the background, but I've not read any, you know, anything as deep as your book. Whenever I put a plastic in the microwave, I just think,
right.
I don't think I should do this.
You don't think your paleo ancestors were doing that?
And well, a lot of things my paleo ancestors weren't doing, but you've just convinced me today to pay attention to this for good. That's it. It's over.
Well,
I'm wondering what to do with these bottles, but certainly the hot stuff, it's over.
Yeah. And I feel like with the phthalates, it's kind of been the same line in science is that, oh, they don't really leach. They're all linked together.
Yeah.
Sure enough, you start doing the studies and you do find 1,000, you find 1,000 nanograms per liter of phthalates in the room temperature drinking water. I mean, can you imagine how much is in the oils, right? The seed oils that are stored in these plastic bags at the, you know, when you're doing animal studies, for example, and you're looking at obesity with oils.
Yeah.
Right. So we're altering a lot of our scientific data by adding estrogen chemicals without inadvertently. right? So it's in the background. It's confounding a lot of our research.
Got it. So where are the phthalates? They're coming from where again?
Directly from the plastic. They're just leaching in.
They're all, and they're which plastics?
Right. So basically all the plastics except 2, 4, and 5.
2, 4, and 5. And that would be what?
And those still have some phthalates sometimes, but it's not quite as – They just look like regular plastics.
Just got to see the numbers.
Yeah.
So are there any plastics that are safe for us to be using?
Well, yeah, 2, 4, and 5 are safe.
2, 4, and 5 are pretty good.
Because they don't have the phthalates. I mean, you can argue about –
Do they have the BPA?
No. 7 is BPA. Yeah, okay. It's 1 through 7 are the numbers on the recycling symbols.
2, 4, 5.
But glass and stainless steel are the ultimate alternative because
– Not ceramics.
Oh, ceramics are good too, but not for water bottles.
What is with 2, 4? You skip 3. Why just 2, 4, and 5?
Just because those are the ones that don't have phthalates generally, whereas 3 would. And one of them is polystyrene. I think number 6 is polystyrene, which is not estrogenic. So I want people to know that, but it is very bad for the environment. So I don't like to recommend people use it, even though it's not really going to hurt your health.
And it seems that the big issue. Mm-hmm. In terms of both the epigenetic and the clinical effects, is the chronic exposure.
Correct.
Right?
100%.
And so if you're having intermittent exposure, it's not that big a deal.
Exactly.
Probably.
Even for me, I travel, I'll take a plastic bottle. I'm not trying to scandalize people because
obviously
I'm the estrogen guy, right? People see me as like.
But you're just trying to raise awareness about, it seems pretty simple to avoid these things.
Correct, but personal care products gets a little more difficult. Because most of them have parabens and phthalates, and it's not on the label.
Parabens is the first time you mentioned that.
Okay, yeah, parabens are also estrogenic. It's complicated.
But you're not ingesting.
You're rubbing them on your skin. They do go through your skin.
They go through your skin, okay.
Oh, sure. And they have a lot of these in laundry detergents as well, and they've done studies. Even just having these fragrances in the air, you know, it soaks into the skin. You know, like, for example, they did a study where they had a shirt with this fragrance. It was from a laundry detergent, and it was just in a chamber, right? And then they put that on a person, and it spiked their blood levels of parabens.
Okay.
And just recently, it's been making headlines with the sunscreen. Have you seen that?
No.
With the oxybenzone and the benzophenones, which is another class of estrogens on my top 10 list, because these sunscreen chemicals are also in the personal care products. Because they're protecting against UV degradation, right, for your hair and things like that and your clothing. And they don't have to put them on the label. That's the big problem because it's part of their quote-unquote proprietary secret ingredients, right? So it's kind of a loophole in the regulation because they're basically allowed to use these cheap petroleum fillers, which act like estrogen, but they don't even have to disclose that.
Now, I'm going to go back to the sunscreen products. Most of those, they tell you what the –
They do tell you for that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And that one is easy to find out. You look on it. If it says oxybenzone or benzophenone, that's a synonym. Benzophenone 3 and oxybenzone are the same thing.
It seems like oxybenzone was recently became popular, like it was being recommended by dermatologists.
And not today.
But isn't that the one that for a while there was like, that's the one?
Oh, yeah.
Because it had A, broad spectrum A and B and stuff.
Right. Correct. But zinc is better. I mean, zinc is the alternative. It costs a little bit more, but you can block it. You just
Zinc is great. It's just hard to cover large areas with zinc.
Correct. And
there's no spray.
There is spray now.
Is there spray now? Okay.
The company's called Babo, B-A-B-O. Babo Botanicals makes a spray because I do a lot of research on this. I've tested a million products. I don't make any money. I don't have any endorsements from these companies. I don't need that. I like to stay non-biased.
Sure. Are there any sunscreen products other than zinc that you think are okay?
No. I mean, titanium's okay.
But we're only using those very intermittently, though, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
But not in the shampoo. The problem is they put oxybenzone in. That's the new car smell, right? And they, like, even the daycare facilities, like, they've got these plastic daycare facilities. And in here in California, I've got these references in my book. And they say the air quality exceeds cancer benchmarks from the plastics, right, from leaching into the air.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean,
that's the smell.
Just because we're breathing that amount in, yeah. That's not even rubbing on the kid's skin.
Is there any way to – well, there are obviously ways to manufacture certain plastics that are better than others, right?
100%. It's just a little – it's one penny more.
It's expense. Okay. So personal care products – so sunscreens we've hit. We've hit 2, 4, and 5 of the plastics we use. Ceramics and steel and glass.
Alternatives.
And then what else in the personal care products other than sunscreen? Things we can easily avoid.
Yeah. I mean, the thing on the personal care products, you want to look for the label phthalate-free, paraben-free. You know, it's a sure thing.
That's a sure thing? Because just phthalates and parabens?
So. Right. Well, lavender essential oil is the one essential oil, maybe tea tree oil, that have been shown to act like estrogen. So there is some potential there. For example, they had children coming in with gynecomastia, little boys that were growing breast tissue. And they had them remove the lavender essential oil from their personal care products, and the breast development went away completely. And they published this in the New England Journal of Medicine. A lot of people argue with me about it, but they've done a follow-up study with a totally different brand of essential oil. They've done receptor studies showing that it binds the estrogen receptor. So it's not just a couple case studies, right? And that data was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, the receptor binding assays.
Right. How old were these kids? Do you know?
No, I can't remember, because there's been a couple other studies and there's been different ages. I mean, some of them are like 9 months old. Some of them are like 10 years old.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because 9 months, sometimes they get funny things left over from
the mother.
Yes.
Sure.
And then early, just pre-puberty, it's common to get gynecomastia. And but it gets more pronounced. Really, they're easily made more pronounced by environmental factors. That's where we see it from.
Sensitivity.
The cannabis. So that's where they really see a lot of that.
Interesting.
Okay. If I were listening to this podcast, I want to know, what do I avoid?
We're working on it.
You can buy the book. That will give it to you, of course.
Of course. And it is easy to read. I mean, it's sounding real technical because you're a technical guy.
It doesn't sound technical yet. No, no.
Okay,
no.
Good.
It's sounding good.
Trust me. I've never had anybody say it's too technical to read. It's super simple.
Attention, true crime fans, check out 22 Hours, An American Nightmare on Podcast One. It was a case nightmares are made of. A family held hostage for nearly 24 hours and murdered inside their own home. WTOP examines the complicated trial of evidence that police say led to finding their killer and why they say he committed such a brutal crime. Download new episodes of 22 Hours, An American Nightmare on Apple Podcast and Podcast One. Our friends at GarmaGuard just sent me their newest all-organic on-the-go antimicrobial spray, and it's amazing. GarmaGuard, a veteran-owned company, has created great-smelling antimicrobial on-the-go spray designed to kill odor-causing bacteria for your clothes. First product of its kind. You can now quickly spray your clothes, uniforms, even your shoes while wearing them. GarmaGuard is the first all-organic, non-GMO, natural garment antimicrobial spray, which is trusted and used by individuals at home, as well as professionals such as physicians, commuters, moms. You wash your hands throughout the day, but what about your clothing? One quick spray of GarmaGuard will help you kill microbes on clothing, shoes, uniforms, and more, wherever your family may worry about bringing home whatever. GarmaGuard antimicrobial spray puts your mind at ease, killing microorganisms you can't see and keeping your clothing fresh. GarmaGuard will eliminate odors, refresh clothes between washes during your day, even after the gym. Think about your kids after school. Go to GarmaGuard.com. That's GarmaGuard. And use coupon code Drew15 and you'll get a 15% off your entire purchase. Buy now, receive fast free shipping on all purchases. GarmaGuard.com. Coupon code DrDrew15. Love it or your money back. GarmaGuard.com. And of course, our friends at True Car want to remind you about True Cash offers. Hard to put a value on your car, all you've been through with it. But with True Car, they can give you a True Cash offer. That's right. It's that simple. You just go to TrueCar.com, enter your license plate number, watch out your car details, jump right in there, then answer some questions. And, you know, that's it. You head over to a True Car certified dealer and they give you a check. It is that simple. They check out the car with you and then you leave with a check. Or if you wish, you want to trade in for a new or used vehicle, go ahead and head over to True Car. Look at the scattergram for a car you want. See what people are paying for cars like that. Lock in that true price. It includes fees and accessories. And when you lock in that price, you know you've locked in something that is on that True Car certified dealer's lot. And you know it's a fair price because they compete for your business. So you lock in that True Cash offer, you go to the True Car certified dealer, you walk away with a check or your new ride. That's right, new or used. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True Cash offer not available in all areas.
I wish you'd write a book more on the epigenetics, though.
I mean, read Chapter 9. It's all about epigenetics.
Okay. All right. Good. All right, so personal care product. We got the shampoos. Watch out, paraben free, phthalate free. What if it doesn't say that on the product? That's something we're using regularly.
It almost always has the parabens and the phthalates.
But let's say we cut out. You know, now I know how my brain works. We go into deal making. Right. Like, so I'll cut out the plastics, I'll watch the water, I'll get the charcoal, I'll be very, very careful. Certainly I can keep using my shampoo. It's not that big a deal.
Right. And that's what
that
I
may
do.
Be true, right?
Exactly. And that's what I say in my book, right? It's like I made a gold plan, a silver plan, and a bronze plan. So basically,
Plato.
I told you it's easy to read. basically, if you're a pro athlete or something like that, and I do consult for pro athletes and high level, high performing, like MMA fighters, and I'm giving a talk for the special operations upcoming pretty soon for the military. I work with a lot of these guys. If you're one of those guys, right, I mean, you do want to be more careful, more meticulous, more extreme, cost more money, of course.
More money.
Yeah, you know, replacing your shower curtains and things like that. Maybe there's like leaching in the air with these cheap, shower curtains.
So it's really avoiding plastics in our environment wherever we can.
Correct. But then again, if you're a college student on a budget or something like that, you know, you don't have to go that extreme. And it's like you said, right? Like you can pick and choose and hit the big ones, like filtering your water. Everyone should be filtering their water.
Any particular filters?
Activated charcoal. I don't care what the brand is. You know,
just activated charcoal.
Sometimes they call it carbon. And that's legitimate. That's a synonym for activated charcoal. It's not really, but they use it as a synonym. They're allowed to say that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And activated, and those are just those ones you can get for your kitchen.
The Brita filter, or the flip ones, right? The ones that flip up off your sink. Mm-hmm. Reverse osmosis also works. So I personally have a reverse osmosis with.
That's very different than charcoal, though, in terms.
Well, it is, but it's not because the one I have and most of them actually have activated charcoal. So they have a cotton filter to remove. Big particulate.
Oh,
and then the next chamber is actually activated charcoal.
Oh, so it's the same thing.
And then the next chamber is reverse osmosis. And then the final chamber, at least on mine, is a remineralizer. So it pumps magnesium back into it.
That's interesting.
So it tastes better.
And is that something you put in your kitchen sink again?
Yeah, I did. I installed I personally installed my own.
Is there a particular brand?
The one I like is, it's called Purified Guru.
Purified Guru.
Because it's stainless steel. The whole unit is stainless and it has a pump. So most of them actually have a plastic thing, big plastic tank under your sink that you have to have.
Right.
So then we're back to sitting in plastic. And that's, you know, it's better because at least we're filtering out all this other stuff, right? The atrazine, the birth control, the PVC pipe, phthalates, you know, from all that. But, you know, why not have a stainless steel without a big tank? Because mine has a pump, so you flip it on and you can just run it indefinitely, which is tricky because I have four kids. So obviously they'll flip it on and just leave it and leave the room. And you'll just be running your filter nonstop. So you have to be careful for that because you can go all day. Whereas with a normal, with most reverse osmosis machines, you'll run out of water in the tank.
That's it. It just stops. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else that we should be paying attention to? Phytoestrogens.
Plant estrogens, yeah. Well, I mean, we mentioned cannabis already. I mentioned you know, lavender. That's a big one. Certainly soy acts like estrogen.
Massively, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And yet we sort of advocate for soy.
Yeah, and a lot of the debate has to do with, well, in part, there's some scientific, you know, contention. Mm-hmm. Like some papers say it prevents breast cancer. Some papers say it promotes breast cancer. There's a lot of debate on this whole topic. Flax is another one, actually.
Flaxseed?
They did a study with over 100 food items in Canada, and all the foods were under 1,000 micrograms of phytoestrogen, except soy and flax. They were both over 100,000 micrograms, over 100,000.
So flax also.
So it's just night and day difference. Flax has the benefit of having omega-3s, of course, and it also has CBD, which is also beneficial.
That's CBD. Crazy.
Yeah. So there's some offsetting benefits to flax. And of course, your gut bacteria, at least with soy and flax, your gut bacteria have seen these in our ancestors and things like that. You know, they know how to modify these molecules, actually make them beneficial. So some of the breakdown products are actually beneficial. Like EQOL is one of them, EQUOL.
The flax, this is?
That's a soy breakdown product.
Soy breakdown. Huh.
That's a isoflavone breakdown product. But I mean, that's getting into the weeds. And then, you know, it differs depending on different cell types. So for example, they did a study, this vegan doctor that I'm not even going to mention his name, but he loves to promote this study because they showed in one cell type, like a kidney cell or something, a liver cell, that I can't remember which cell type, but they just grew these cells in a dish and they put these soy estrogens on the cells and it only activated the beta receptor. But then that's supposedly more beneficial. Yeah. Right? It is more beneficial. But the funny thing about that exact study that he cites and touts, they did another experiment in the same exact paper and with a different cell type from humans, and it showed only activation of the alpha receptor. You see?
Say that again.
So the first
study showed
figure
beta.
One, yeah, beta activation. Figure two, different cell type, only alpha activation. So in other words,
so
in our
maybe
body,
certain cells.
Exactly. Yeah. So in our body, it's a little more complex than
as always.
So some people get benefits, I think, depending on where they need benefits in terms of which receptors are being activated. But it's pretty risky to, you know, be loading up on soy estrogens and thinking you're getting benefits. And
all right. So there's another thing we can avoid.
Right.
Microestrogens.
Microestrogens are one that almost nobody talks about. I think I'm the first one to really bring this out because everybody knows mold is toxic, but they don't realize one of the biggest reasons is because mold secrete a chemical that acts like estrogen in your body. It's called microestrogen, zearalenone is technically the name, Z-E-A, zearalenone. It's, you know, it's brutal. Like farmers I've interviewed for my book, they talk about how it brings the, you know, if you feed your pigs a bunch of moldy grains, it'll bring them into estrus.
Hmm.
You know, and things like this. So they usually actually add bentonite clay to bind up the estrogens, but they're still there. I mean, they're storing in a lot of these animals' fats.
I'm just thinking we're talking about this as though I'm you know, I was thinking humbly more from the perspective of male systems being exposed to estrogens.
Mm-hmm.
Are females more plastic, more flexible in terms of their responsiveness to estrogens?
I don't think so. I think there's equal problems.
And now we have, you know, the birth control pills themselves. Some women are exposed to large amounts of estrogens over long periods of time.
Large is a relative term. I mean, it's actually pretty low dose because the 17-alpha-ethinylestradiol, which is the active ingredient in most birth control, that's a really low dose. It's specifically designed to activate the estrogen receptors at a really low dose and not be broken down by your body so it stays in your body longer. You know, it's actually a pretty low dose for the most part, but you get epigenetic changes for sure.
Right. And so in terms of additive effects of all these different sources of estrogen.
You got it. That's the key.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you throw in, you know, a little bit of moldy grains, which, by the way, America has a ridiculous upper. Well, in fact, we don't even regulate zearalenone. We don't even have an upper limit for mold estrogen, whereas the UK does.
Hmm.
And even tighter regulation is the Europe. Right. And sure enough, the obesity rates reflect that. I mean, I'm not saying that's the only thing, obviously, but it's a big factor.
Interesting. It's it's something that's pretty easy to adjust and avoid, it seems like.
Yeah, because organic grains are a lot better than
But even
than
though all this stuff is everywhere around us, they're pretty simple things we can do.
Correct.
So are you concerned that the breast cancer rate is related to all this?
Yeah, it's up 250% since 1980. I think dressing up football players like newborn baby girls in pink and all this isn't really solving the problem. Raising awareness of breast cancer isn't solving the problem. We have to start avoiding these estrogens, and it's up globally. I mean, as soon as you bring in these giant, you know, these chemicals, these artificial estrogen chemicals, like in the Philippines, you know, breast cancer shoots up 500%. You know, I mean, yeah, it's a correlation, but come on. I mean, you can look at estrogen receptor activation in dishes and you see it all over the place with these cell studies. So it's the best you can do. And by the way, they've tried to find groups of people that don't have phthalates, for example, or don't have BPA, and they can't. I mean, they had to go up to northern Alaska to find a group of people. And then they're comparing them to Americans. And obviously that's a mess because there's totally different lifestyle and everything else is different.
Even these birth control pills, that's so challenging now, though, because the progesterones are having lots of problems too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, I mean, you know, they used to use an artificial estrogen called diethylstilbestrol, DES, and they prescribed it for over 30 years. You know, it was legal, it was encouraged, it was prescribed. And then they found out that it modifies the daughters, especially dramatically in the next generation.
And that's cancer risk.
In a lot of ways, but yeah. And, you know, that's the thing that concerns me the most, going back to that. I mean, the epigenetic changes in animal studies, you see fertility just decrease and decrease and decrease. And the real proof, I mean, Michael Skinner, again, going back to him and his thousands of mice, the real proof of the problem was the fourth generation, right? Because a lot of guys will say in the technical realms here, they'll say, yeah, three generations. Okay, so the mother is exposed the fetus is exposed, and the gametes from the eggs and the sperm inside the fetus are also exposed all at
from
once.
From the mom. Yeah.
Right. So that's three generations all with one shot, because they've done studies, for example, with BPA, and they
expose. So they're saying that's not really epigenetic. It's just,
that's what they
just
could
direct
be.
Exposure.
It might be. That's what they kind of have leaned towards.
But he's seeing it in the fourth also.
He is. And they did a study with a mouse where he just exposed one time, one exposure, and you saw four generations decrease fertility.
And what is it he's worried about? What is his, if he's
I think
so
his,
pessimistic?
His most biggest concern is the fertility dropout, because it sneaks up on you, right? Like, oops, we're now infertile, and now we can't do anything about it four generations
so
later.
So we'll just have a Handmaid's Tale. We'll just set that all up. It'll be the Handmaid's Tale again. That's all. Yeah. No big deal.
Well, what's funny is he's pessimistic, but he did tell me his daughter is pregnant, and he got her a whole house water filter system for $5,000.
Oh,
so I'm
God.
Like, well, you're doing something about
it,
right?
That's crazy.
That's more extreme than me.
Well, okay. So get the book, Estrogeneration.
If you can pronounce it.
Yeah. Estrogenics are making you fat, sick, and infertile. Avoid the plastics. 2, 4, and 5 are okay. Look at all your products. The xenophthalene, what is it called?
Phthalates?
The phthalates, sunscreen.
Oh, oxybenzone.
Yeah. Look for that. Watch out for the lavender oil. Talk to give good consideration to the use of estrogenics in your birth control. Be careful with that, but also be aware that progesterones have lots of problems as well. The phytoestrogens, watch out with your soy. And what else? Soy and?
And flax.
And flax, right. Microestrogen, stay with the organic grains.
100%.
That all sounds pretty doable.
It is. It's just.
And get your water filtered.
It's overwhelming for people because they've never heard any of this usually.
I've heard it in the background. I've not had a concentrated conversation about it ever, I don't think. But I hear it in the background for years.
Right.
Which is why every time I put a plastic in the microwave, I just had to pay attention to that literature. Maybe I had to review it again and make sure, see what's really going on.
It's scary.
It doesn't sound scary to me. It sounds like judicious. It sounds like
it is.
Like, you know, right. Stuff that we should be to pay a little attention to and might have some significant benefit.
Well, let me give you one more really easy fix, because a lot of people say, well, how do I get them out of my body?
Right? Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, avoid them to begin with. That's a good start. But a fat cell can survive a year and a half. The average life of a fat cell, they did studies with the atomic bomb, people that were exposed. The average life of a fat cell is a year and a half long,
mm-hmm.
Up to 10 years. And these things store in your fat, of course, right? These estrogen chemicals. So that can be difficult to get them out. One of the best ways is the sauna. They've done skin patch testing with a nicotine patch, without the nicotine, of course. And they have people with and without going in and out of the sauna. And they find people that are in the sauna are sweating out a ton of BPA and a ton of phthalates and things like that.
Sweating out.
Yep. So they rip the patch off and test the chemicals on the patch.
Sweating out. So I'm trying to understand how heat
mobilizes speeds up molecular motion.
Fat.
Well, our body definitely has a system to get these things out through our sweat glands. Yeah. I mean, according to the skin patch.
Because I'm just thinking of the biology. I mean, the fat is reduced when calories are down and metabolic demand is up.
Right.
Why wouldn't dieting and exercising be the right answer?
I think it is also. And that's one of the reasons exercise balances your hormones
so much. Okay,
for
good.
Sure. For sure.
And
people
then,
are looking for the lazy way, though.
Okay, like, okay.
Just
fair enough.
Sauna.
Fair enough. And then and when things are – from fat, it goes into the bloodstream. I don't quite understand how it ends up in your sweat. I mean, that's one of the places it might end up, I suppose. But
well, it also it increases in your urine as well. So
yeah,
you do,
I would think
you
urine
excrete
where,
a lot more.
Yeah, I would think urine would be where it mostly went, or and your liver is going to deal with the rest.
Right, it does.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So don't freak out, everybody. this is not meant to alarm everybody. It's just trying to raise some awareness here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk about it on your Twitter feed?
I don't do Twitter too much, but sometimes. Usually and Instagram, I throw
Instagram.
Some stuff out.
What is that? Is that also Anthony G.J.?
That's a social media platform.
No, I know what that is. But
that's Anthony G.J., yeah.
It's what? Anthony G.J., J-A-Y.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the website, AGCCO, what's going on there?
Yeah, that's my consulting company. So I actually do DNA consulting as well with 23andMe and things like that.
Oh,
so.
How fun.
Yeah, so there's actually some genetic SNPs that are involved in clearing estrogen, I mean, among other things. Obviously, I'm looking at a number of categories. I'm looking at helping people optimize brain function and diet and exercise and
on the estrogenic side or all
no,
multiple mechanisms
across the board.
Well, yep. let's do two seconds on brain. I'm fascinated by that. What?
Yeah. Well, so for example, a lot of people are taking resveratrol, right?
Yeah.
And there's a gene called sirtuin, and one of them is SIRT1, sirtuin-1.
Well, and there's a lot of nicotinamide, riboside, and all that stuff.
NAD+.
Being used.
Plus.
Yeah,
NAD+. Oh, yeah, plus. Yeah. Well, just focus on this one SNP, for example.
Okay.
This sirtuin gene. Resveratrol, one of the reasons it's so beneficial, it's certainly in animal studies, is it flips on that sirtuin gene.
Yes, I'm aware of that. That's why I take the NR.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I figure, not anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I don't have any issue with that. But where people really should take things that activate your sirtuin is when you have a sirtuin gene issue.
Oh,
right.
And that's
so there's
SNPs.
A SNP, for example. I mean, that's one example.
Can I look that up on?
Oh, yeah. On your 23andMe.
Really?
Yep. Yep. I do it every day.
they didn't specify it in the.
No, they don't. In the 23andMe stuff.
How do you.
Because I'm kind of, you know, a
you have
lot
to go to
more
the, you have
on
to go to the full database?
Raw data. I use the raw data.
Oh. So yeah. I have to give it to you and you have to go look at it.
Correct.
I see. We could
do a podcast on it sometime.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so.
Tell them what sirtuin does.
Well, sirtuin is, it's just, I mean, in simplest terms, it's just one of these longevity-related genes.
It actually does a lot of things.
It increases autophagy, for example. So it imitates fasting. For example, right? But it's an energy sensor, just like NAD is involved in energy sensing.
Yeah.
So it basically increases longevity by telling your cells that they're not using energy as much. I mean, I'm trying to make it simple. Yeah. I honestly don't really know that much about sirtuin. It is super complicated.
Sure. And is there other things besides NR that affect that gene?
Oh, yeah. A lot of things. One of my favorites is grapeseed proanthocyanins because resveratrol actually acts like estrogen if you take a ton of it. So that happens with a lot of these plant compounds, a lot of these flavonoids. If you just isolate that flavonoid and start sucking it down in these supplements, mm-hmm. I mean, you do end up flipping on a lot of estrogen switches. Mm. And I obviously find that problematic, or at least it makes me nervous. So I like these grapeseed proanthocyanins because they're not flipping the estrogen switch, but they are activating the sirtuin. And again, that's just one gene. I mean, you asked about the brain. So I'm also looking at ApoE, right? I'm looking at transferrin.
The dementia stuff.
Yeah, the dementia and the cholesterol and the phospholipid form of DHA. I'm looking at...
And are you just advising people to take supplements to modify that?
I mean, if you've got the ApoE4... Well, if you got the ApoE4, you definitely should be taking DHA. Like a lot.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot meaning what?
Like 2 or 3 grams a day. But that's really expensive if you don't have it. And there's no reason to be doing that. Yeah, I mean, Rhonda Patrick is probably the expert on that topic because she has the 3/4.
I think I take 2,000 milligrams already. I thought it's not that much. It comes in 1,000 milligram tablets.
Yeah,
things.
Right. It just gives you the fish burps or something. If you have a poor quality.
Yeah. I use the Nordic Naturals. They're pretty good. Yep. I just read a lot of different DHA, you know, sort of. There's people that use it for mood and all kinds of things. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, it has a lot of interesting.
Stick it in there. Why not?
I've published peer-reviewed stuff on it.
Yeah, I personally take stuff where I just don't see a downside and there's a possible upside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that works, but it's expensive for a lot of people. I mean, honestly, you'd be better off to do a DNA consult with me, and then we could cut a lot of that fat off your supplement
list.
Maybe
there's something else I need.
Exactly, right?
Which would be worse. And so what do? You just send you –
Just take the raw data.
You go to your website?
Yeah, people go to my website and
that's the AGCCO?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a terrible name. I actually used to design viruses for the government back when I was researching Alzheimer's disease. I became good at making virus from DNA. So I actually used DNA and then put it in human cells and the cells would make virus and I'd spin that down with an ultracentrifuge.
Yeah.
And then I was contracted out to make virus and it was all research. I was just knocking genes down and things.
You're trying to change gene mechanisms, gene activations?
Yeah, so we were...
With viruses, you were splicing in genes.
Oh, sure. We still do that, right? Yeah. shRNA and things like that. You knock down genes.
I mean, that's the holy grail of medicine one day that we'll take care of.
Oh, yeah. Now CRISPR is a lot better, of course,
than
shRNA knockdown because the viruses have other extracurricular things they're doing in many cases.
Right.
But at least back then, I was contracted out. So they said, well, what's your company going to be, right? You have to have a company to protect yourself legally. So I just called it AJ Consulting Company. It's a terrible name, but that's where I came up with it.
And then you sign up on your website and then you download your raw data and you take a look at it.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, maybe we'll do that one day and we'll analyze my stuff and see what it shows. I think it'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. Gary, make note of that. That's a future show.
Copy that.
We're going to do DNA analysis.
Sounds good to me.
I have a Lynch syndrome.
Okay.
So I'm the MSH6, so I already have colon and stomach cancer stuff I'm screening for. But
yeah.
I'm not aware of anything I can do to reduce the risk other than increase screening.
Yeah, sometimes you get in those cases. Yeah.
All right, listen, I appreciate you coming in. This has been very interesting, and we'll do another one. And I hope everyone checks the book out, Ester Generation, and I hope you take heed. Take heed, because I think a little bit could go a long way, it seems to me.
I agree. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Anthony J., everybody, and we'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or DrDrew.com.